Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Back for part two. More discussion on housing and that particular
affordable housing bill
and zoning.
So I think we kind of laid out in the last half hour some of the ups and downs of some of the stuff. So just to continue a little bit, not forever here. So there are people like Representative Connolly who basically feels that the governor's bill, which was 4075, which later became, I think it's 4290, right? Mm-hmm. Which has some other, a little bit other, it had a little clarification and a little bit of extra provisions for producing affordable housing in it, just a bit.
It actually used the word.
Right? But the truth is that the primary thrust of the bill was to just to get more housing. Okay.
The primary thrust of the bill was to lower the threshold for the
Vote. Right. Because under the belief that that's going to produce more housing in the burbs, which I'm not convinced of. But so the thing is, so now should this pass in what they call the informal session of the state legislature?
Which is what's now.
Right.
Till the 31st.
Right. The bill ended up in the Ways and Means Committee, and the question is if it's reported out, can they just sort of basically wave it through so it's not a sort of a...
And as Denise Simmons pointed out, it's been around for a year. It's not like they just came up with it. Because people were kind of... That's true. Saying like, as if this just was sprung upon them with no public comment. And I guess there was...
Here's the dynamic of what's shaped up.
Yeah.
Right? What's happened is it was people were coming up to the mic and they were saying, well, this is an inadequate bill. It's just a giveaway to the evil property owners and the developers and the real estate industry.
Right.
We need a bill that actually incorporates things like tenant protections and
affordability,
producing affordable units, meaning subsidized units, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who knows how the legislature actually works understands that there are a lot of legislatures. If you start loading up a bill that tries to do something relatively simple with more and more and more conditions, then it becomes less and less likely that people are going to want to approve it. So I think there's an understanding with the speaker, DeLeo, that in fact, it's not just the industry people who don't want to have all these. There's a lot of legislatures who don't want to have all of these extra conditions piled on.
Well, because they represent the towns that...
Right. I mean, they are representatives. Yeah. And it's not just of those towns. Yeah. I mean, you know, but so I think the speaker probably knows more or less what the legislators want, you know. But then there is sort of the pretty lefty group here who want to put a lot more conditions on.
But they said the people that actually are representing Cambridge, the other representatives, are in support of it. Is that?
Well, I think they're going in support of the bill as it is written today.
Right.
Now, some of those Cambridge legislators, I think, would probably also like to see all these other things added on. But I think they also understand that the more you glom on, the more likely is that somebody's going to say, hold on, wait a minute. And then you're back to where you were 5 and 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And you get nothing. Okay. So that was really what I think the dynamic was last night when the city councilors had to basically discuss this and vote on it.
And now, did they vote on it? I got confused
They voted on it. Okay, so there was some efforts to substitute language
and
whatever. But in the end, what happened was that there were some city councilors.
Yeah.
You know, people like Councilor Zondervan, Carlone, Siddiqui, and somebody else.
Kelly, I think.
Maybe Kelly.
Yeah.
Who basically said, no, I'm not going to support the bill as is.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
And then there were others who were basically, you know, just, you know, so Councilors Simmons, Toomey, Mallon, and...
McGovern.
Mm-hmm. Basically, no, we support it as is. And Jan Dever was not at the meeting.
Right, which would have...
So when it went to a vote, it got a 4-4-1 vote. So four in favor
of... What does that happen?
And by the way, this doesn't enact anything. This is just
this
a policy
just
order saying we support
the House bill.
The current bill and want it to pass in the informal session.
Yeah.
All right, so 4-4-1 vote means it doesn't pass. So there is no message being sent to the state legislature. Now, some people were trying to basically hang hang it on Connolly... because he's the one who's saying, I'm going to hold it up. I'm not going to allow it to pass here because it doesn't have all these extra things that I want.
Right.
You know? Because honestly, if it was up to him, you know, he would demand that every bit of new housing be, you know, regulated housing. So they don't. So anyway, that's the reason why the council was not able to solidify around a single position. And what the legislature will do, legislature is going to do in the closing couple of weeks when none of the members are even on the floor.
So, it has to come out of the committee in order to be
right. So you bring it out, and then if somebody says, "Well, we want to bring it to the floor to vote on it," all it takes is one legislator to say, "Nope, can't do it."
And that Connolly could be Connolly.
He would probably don't do it.
Because he hasn't said it yet. He hasn't had an opportunity to be there in person. You have to be
right. But on his website, he has said it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
So the thing is now, is he going to change his mind? Who knows? But the thing is that I think some of the city councilors made the point that, well, okay, if you don't pass this, you think that then when it comes up in January, that somehow you're going to get what you want, or you're going to get nothing at all.
Wait, can it come up in January if there's no...
It's a new session, so I think it's naive to think that somehow you're simply going to just move on in January. It's going to become another long, protracted process.
Uh-huh.
But I think, if you are kind of the hard left, kind of social, socialist-leaning legislators, then you don't care about the short term. You have this vision for the future where you're going to mm-hmm. regulate more and more and more. And that's what you want. So, honestly, I'm going there. I have a certain perspective, and I'm listening to both sides arguing. I don't agree with any of you people. I think you guys are all missing the boat. Council didn't do anything with it as a result.
Well, probably just as
other than talk. They talked a lot. Right?
Yeah. Well, it had to be talked about.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, meanwhile, there's the mayor has now officially appointed, or at least give notice of the appointments being made for this blue ribbon task force or whatever they called it on tenant protections. All right. And appointed Councillor Siddiqui as a chair or co-chair of this. Right. So presumably as we head into the municipal election year, because, these things are intertwined, this is going to become a big topic of conversation.
Okay, let me ask you, before that failed, there was a vote to table it, and that failed. Now, what did that mean? What would tabling it have done? Because there were five no's and four yeses.
That. I think that there was an effort to table it.
What does that mean? That's what Siddiqui, Carlone, Kelly, and Zondervan wanted to do.
They wanted to just table the matter because this way, if they felt they didn't have the votes, then...
Okay, but that failed, and then the eventual roll. Okay.
Right.
All right.
I don't understand quite what the point of tabling is, because the thing is the informal session of legislature is going to expire before they would ever have a chance to talk about it.
Well, then they had to do a roll call vote to end debate, and that was a 6-2 vote. Because Kelly and Carlone...
But it was just all procedural nonsense
at that
point.
So
the point is it wasn't going to have the votes to get the support. And it wouldn't matter anyway, because honestly, all it is just an opinion from the city council. It's still in the hands of the state
legislature. So basically, it just gets filed as a no vote, or it doesn't come up again?
No action,
or? No action.
It doesn't pass.
It doesn't pass.
It fails of adoption. So, end of story. We'll see what the legislature does.
Yeah.
I actually think there's a chance that it could actually get approval, and it might actually get some amendment, but only minor amendment, and it might happen. We'll see. Again, it's not my personal choice to drop the threshold to 50%. And also, there's an oddity about this, and this is like the rarest of rare is me and Connolly actually agreeing on something, is that there is an oddity about this idea of that it takes two-thirds majority, it would take only a 50% majority to enact something,
but if a year later you decided,
well, I don't like this, we need to rescind it, but then it takes two-thirds majority to go the other way.
Well, they did that because they wanted to stay in place.
Right. But the thing is this is sort of unprecedented.
Yeah.
The thing is zoning amendments are zoning amendments. And sometimes you upzone, sometimes you downzone. Sometimes you change boundaries, sometimes you don't. But the thing is it's always been the same standard to pass one way or the other. And, in my time following Cambridge, I've watched a period when we were downzoning.
Yeah.
And you got two-thirds majority to do that. And then you're upzoning, and you get two-thirds majority to do that. So I don't think in Cambridge the two-thirds requirement has ever really been the issue. Maybe there's some odd project or proposal that went down to defeat because it couldn't get the six votes.
Okay, here's a question. I get 2/3 of 9, but I don't get 50% of 9. What's that?
It just means 5 of 9, yeah.
Oh.
Right. And by the way, there's another thing, too, which is that...
5 of 9, but that's more than 50%.
You break the threshold, you know. Okay. You want to make a 10-person council? Great.
I don't know. It's just crazy.
So the thing is that the current thresholds are 6 out of 9 councillors for each 2/3. If 20% of the ownership of a affected area in a zoning petition objects and files official objection, then it actually bumps it up to a 3/4.
But I heard that they want to make it 50%.
Well, no. So what they want to do is now they want to say, okay, if we lower it to 50% threshold, then it would take, so then would it be 20% would force a higher threshold? No. They want to make it now you'd have to be 50%
right,
of the
ownership.
Right,
that's what I'm saying. They would have to,
and then the higher threshold would be to put it back up to the 2/3.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm just uneasy about the notion that if you can't win on the merits of your argument, you go for changing of the rules.
Mm.
To me, that's kind of a cheap way to solve a problem, you know? I mean, maybe it's just that we're stuck with the legislature we have and they're just incapable of looking at the big picture and enacting by simple majority vote of the legislature changes to the way zoning is done generally, you know, so that certain things aren't permissible. You know, that would be the better solution. You know, maybe...
Do they need a 2/3 majority in a legislature?
No. But the thing is that if you had an unfriendly governor, the governor could veto, and then you would have to do a 2/3 override.
I see.
But you have, on this particular, this was in, the at least the initial one, was introduced by the governor,
right.
So he's not going to veto it.
No.
So this is probably the little window of an opportunity to pass something, even if it's not the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just disappointed because I think we can do better.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, the state legislature continues to disappoint.
I mean, overall, if it got passed, would we really be affected that much negatively? No.
You know, I don't, you know, I think
you're
the
talking
most,
about one counselor.
Right. I think, but the issue isn't so much in Cambridge. I mean, the thing
exactly.
Is
so I'm just saying it's sort of a moot point here,
right,
isn't
but,
it?
But if, for example, again, and I'm a little unsure about how this affects this, affordable housing overlay proposal, because the thing is that if they were going to have a hard time reaching 6 votes, will this enable them to make do it on five?
Good
right?
Point.
So then you start saying, well, okay, so why is the where is the passion to make this happen? Is this just because somebody's trying to railroad this particular proposal through?
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure if that's true, but I think it's a valid concern.
That is interesting.
At least consider that as a possibility. Right.
All right. The other big issue was, to me, the supplemental budget item about cannabis and all of that.
And okay. So, the thing is that, and it's funny because I must have missed it in a previous agenda, or maybe it was inadvertently left off the unfinished business.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't actually realize until about a week ago that, in fact, that the cannabis zoning had actually been passed to a second reading.
It had.
But I just must have missed it. So I went back and corrected all my materials. Mm-hmm. Sorry. So anyway, so we had to come to a vote last night, and it did, and it passed on a 7-1 vote. Now with
who voted?
Some
I think
minor
Kelly?
Amendments.
No, Toomey.
Toomey voted against it. Right. There were some concerns raised about the inadequacies of certain aspects of it all.
Buffer zones and.
Right. There was a proposal from Jan Devereaux, that even though she wasn't at the meeting.
Right, she had written
communicated,
something. Yeah.
She actually reminded them that she'd expressed some interest in something at a committee meeting, which had to do with what they call the BA1 zones. I actually live in a BA1 zone.
Yeah, you spoke on that.
Yeah, so the thing is that, you know, there are, you know, it's one thing if you want to put in cannabis retail in Central Square or Harvard Square or
Well, they are doing
whatever.
Central
so,
Square.
Yeah. All right, but the question was, is that, well, what about these sort of small, what I like to call mom and pop retail zones?
Which are BA1 to 4? Or
BA1, BA2, BA3. Okay. But BA1 in particular, sometimes you find some BA1 zones that are about a block long, and it was just because historically there was a barbershop and a corner store and a whatever. Mm-hmm. So do you want that to become sort of cannabis central right there? You know, in a zone that wouldn't even allow a bar today, Yeah, but now you're going to want a pot shop.
I live, I think, in an area like that. Brookline and Putnam, there's like a cleaning store. There's two restaurants.
Yeah, now some of that may just
be... And that's it.
Some of that may simply be just grandfathered in.
Yeah.
You know, so it predates the current zoning, you know.
Yeah.
So I was not at all convinced that that putting in the table of uses that somehow that cannabis sales would be okay in some of these zones. I actually, and actually, as Dennis Carlone pointed out, and I think he's spot on about this, is if you make that an allowable use there, then in fact, you run the risk that somebody who wants to open up that type of establishment is willing to pay higher rent. So then the existing little mom and pop places can't compete with it. So then they end up getting displaced.
Yeah.
You know, because you could drive the rents up as a result of this. And I actually think, especially for other reasons having to do with retail in the city, it's important to keep some of these sort
those
of
smaller
places where, you know, a small entrepreneur could be competitive and not have to get killed on the rent, you know. So I thought the council was totally misguided about this. But
they were really voting on the whole social equity piece, too.
Right. So I think one amendment they said is, okay, at least for a couple of years, if you're a group A applicant.
Group A would be the social, would be
minority-owned businesses or whatever, right?
Group B is established already medical marijuana places.
Now, the thing is, so that's not specifically in the zoning, but there's a related ordinance that will follow.
Right.
Between now and April, because the date of implementation is set at April 20th, which is a certain, you know, there's a little funny aspect to that because apparently it's like a National Marijuana Day or something.
Oh, geez.
So that was why it was put on that. But it's so the thing is there'll be this extra piece that will basically delineate who has a right to
priority,
who gets priority, you know. You know, personally, I'm a little uneasy about the notion that zoning, you basically say, well, you can do this, but you can't. But I also understand why they're doing it, too.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just a finite term thing for a couple of years. But somebody did point out that if you were part of one of these sort of privileged entities that got a right to open there, then a year later, you could sell it to another. Because once you open up the marijuana store... then somebody, you could sell your business to somebody else who's not part of that group, and then they can continue.
Since when? Are you sure it's not like a limited equity thing? Like
no, you have a right to sell your business.
No, but...
but once you get established,
not if it's... I don't know how this ordinance reads. Maybe you have to give it to another... just like in limited equity housing, it has to be another...
That's restraint of trade. I don't think you can actually in any way
sure
say you can't sell it to... You can't really dictate who you can and can't sell
well,
to.
Well, then, it defeats
given a
the whole purpose of
they're
it.
Given a preference to who can open it, right? But then what happens down the road is another
well,
matter.
Well, then it seems
and
to
I think
me...
after 2 years, it's moot anyway, because then it's sort of open season.
Well, jeez. All right. Well, now
so anyway, I'm not the happiest with my
I'm not happy with the whole
today.
Thing. I voted no on I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it either. But the thing is, I also acknowledge that it's a statewide vote, so it's going to happen,
know,
right? So to me, really the issue is how do you do it best, right?
Okay.
So anyway, so that passed 7-1-1. I think that the passage was never in doubt.
Yeah.
So now it's
after
like
August,
about a four-month implementation period, and we'll see what happens, right?
Is that what Mark McGovern wanted to move up? Was that the
implement? Yes, yes.
Okay.
So meanwhile, there's like multiple marijuana dispensaries, because medical marijuana dispensaries are sort of like they're the Trojan horse.
Now, they're already out there, right?
Right. So you think is you're opening your place for medical and then with the absolute intention of then becoming recreational.
But you can only do that if they've exhausted their applicants in Group A. I think.
Maybe,
That came up last night.
It's like, anyway, Planning Board tonight is actually they're having like a marathon session of multiple applicants, at least two of which are cannabis-related ones.
Then is that recorded?
One is Revolutionary ones, which is one.
That's recorded, right?
It is recorded,
all right,
yeah.
I'll have to catch it in my spare time.
Now, so anyway, those were the two big items to kind of close out the year, you know?
Yes.
And as I say, let's not forget, 2019 begins the municipal election year.
Oh, gosh. And, well, already hearing a little bit.
But, you know, I remember Frank Duhay some years ago saying, like, well, you know, as soon as it turns January 1st, it kind of changes the dynamic. People are engaging in things. with an eye on the election, and it's just, it's inevitable. So.
Well, you brought up, and I kind of agree, because I went to it, you probably heard it later, I went to the State of the City address.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, Mayor McGovern was very forceful about the affordable housing thing.
The reason why I don't go to State of the City things, honestly, is that I just think they are basically carrying out the personal politics of one individual. And
well, it was Louis
we never rally, right. Well, it's okay if the city manager wants to do this, but we never had State of the City address until Anthony Galluccio became mayor, and then
he was there.
You know, Anthony. You know, if you know Anthony, he wanted to increase his stature, so he invented this thing.
It was a ceremony. Well, there were the kids that sang and whatever. Yeah.
Right. You know, but I don't buy into it personally.
Yeah.
Now I have to say one of the biggest items that happened at the council meeting yesterday for me personally was, and I didn't even notice it even though it was actually printed, was the impending retirement of City Clerk Donna Lopez.
That was a big surprise.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you know, she's been working, I think, in the City Clerk's office. She's certainly been working for the city for
49 years. She must have been like 18 or something.
Well, right? Well, here I want to say about Donna. Yeah. I mean, she's a real buddy. You know, I help her, she helps me. Mm. And she's been great. But the thing is, Donna Lopez was deputy city clerk. She worked within the clerk's office. Mm-hmm. For all these years, and it's actually only the last 7 years that she's actually been the city clerk.
I see. Okay.
Right? So in my time paying attention to all this stuff, she's the fourth city clerk.
Uh-huh.
I've
named the other
known.
Ones.
Paul Healy. Right?
I didn't know that one.
He became in 1969.
Was he related to the other Healy?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
1969 to 1986, it was Paul Healy.
Oh,
then
that's a long time.
Right, 17 years. And then Joe Connerton was 1986 to 1992.
Don't remember any of this.
And I knew Joe. And I was there on the dramatic night when he got kind of eased out.
Who got eased out?
Joe Connerton.
And who replaced him?
Margaret Drury.
I remember her.
And then Margaret turned out to be just great.
She used to be the rent control head.
She was the executive director of the rent control board.
That's how I knew her. Okay.
But, you know, she was sort of a CCA preferred person at the time.
So how long did she have
So
post?
She was city clerk from 1992 to 2012. So she was there for 20 years. You know, and I was surprised when I looked at that.
Oh, my God,
really? Was
20
Margaret in there for that long?
I didn't
Goodness.
Realize that.
Right. But the thing is here's a little fact. Now, I hope I don't get this wrong, but...
Well, they'll tell you.
Donna Lopez, our current city clerk, was there when Paul Healy was city clerk. She was the person training Joe Connerton, then Margaret Drury.
Well, probably. It's 49 years is a long time.
Right. So,
yeah.
You know, so she was the one who was basically getting the city clerks prepped for the as they entered into the job. So everybody was reliant on Donna, and I thought it was wonderful when she actually became city clerk.
So she's only had it since 2012?
Though she's worked in the office forever.
Right, but I'm being actual.
Yep.
So now... Who becomes?
Well, that's not clear.
What is Paula Crane's title?
Paula is now deputy city clerk, and there is a bit of a tradition that the deputy city clerk
becomes
is then elevated to city clerk, but that's a vote of the city council. The way it works under the planning charter, in principle, there are three employees of the city council: the city manager, the city auditor, and the city clerk.
All right.
And these are 3-year terms for the city clerk and the city auditor.
Okay.
Jim Monagle is the city auditor. Now, the thing is the city auditor actually kind of works pretty much in conjunction with the finance department.
Right.
So, you know, the city historically was a much bigger deal than it is today. It was a sort of a political position once upon a time. I don't really think it is anymore. The city clerk could have mattered, but the thing, you know, you know, there have been city clerks that have served for decades over historically. In fact, back in the 1800s, there was Andrew Boardman the second, and Andrew Boardman the third were town clerks of Cambridge, spanning a period of 78 years.
Kind of a little bit of nepotism there, no?
Well, no, I think it was just that they were born to be town
clerks. Well, it's like the Sullivans were born to be mayors.
Oh, yeah, the Sullivans were in for 70-some-odd years as elected officials in the city of Cambridge, right? So anyway, there's a long tradition, you know, and Donna's been really great. So Even before I realized that she was, and by the way, she's still city clerk until May of 2019.
That's true, right.
And the council, I imagine, may very well vote to have Paula Crane be the new city clerk, but that's their vote, and we'll see what happens.
So they have to vote on that.
It has to be a vote, and it's a three-year term. So we'll see how it shakes out, right? But even before that, Donna had actually come down, because there was a question about the history of Plan E, right? And I know a lot about this, and there was this question about when it was first...
That came up last night?
Not at the council. This is more of a private conversation, right. So we're leaving that. So I've got Plan E on the brain because of the history of Cambridge.
Yeah.
And then there was a WGBH story I saw today, maybe it was on Twitter, about how in the city of Lowell, which is another Plan E city, how they have a very, very bad election system. It's 9 at-large elected officials, but it's one of those cities where you vote, every voter just votes for up to 9, and then the top 9 finishers win. Well, the problem is that in a city that has between 40-50% minority population, you get essentially no minority representation on the Lowell City Council.
Because they haven't been
because
running.
Because it's a flawed election system.
Flawed means that they don't...
You can have 51% of the people, in theory, could control all 9 seats. There's no proportional representation. The GBH story actually was incorrect. It said, well, this has been the way it was done intentionally for all sorts of bad purposes back in the 1940s. Not true. What happened is in 1943, Lowell adopted the same planning charter that Cambridge has. And it was in 1957 that they gave up proportional representation.
Oh, they had proportional.
Yes, and they defaulted to just a straight-up at-large system, which is really could be called disproportional representation. And it's been that way since 1957, and it should be corrected, and right now it's in front of a court
an alternative. There's not enough time to discuss this. I'm just curious why that's different than... All right, I'll talk to you after about this.
Right,
it's too technical.
It's proportional representation guarantees good representation.
Because they divide up the vote.
Yeah,
versus they don't do that
here.
They,
in Lowell, there's nothing guarantees proportionality at all.
Hmm.
So
interesting.
Anyway...
So we will
Happy
see
holidays.
You in a couple weeks, 3 weeks maybe. I don't know. January.
Right.
Bye.